we say to America is be true to what you said on paper.
I'm not gonna spend my life being a color.
Tell me you agree with me when I saw you kicking dirt in my eye.
It's Race Across America, 99.1 FM Talk, KKFT.
And good afternoon. I'm Paul White, and welcome to Race Across America. Thanks for joining us. If you're concerned about the race situation in the United States, and if you're not, you should be. If you want to hear nonpartisan, honest, open discussion about both sides of all the race issues, present and past, then this is your show. We give a free pass to no issue, no individual, no race. Everyone's held accountable for what they say and do. We believe people want to hear the entire truth, the facts about America's many racial issues. But the entire truth's hard to find because liberal media hugely outnumbers conservative media by a ratio of more than 5-1. This show believes that if there can be factual, transparent reporting about race issues, and good people of all races will start finding ways to work together for the benefit of everyone. We welcome call-ins at any time during the hour regarding your opinions or questions about the topics under discussion. Our call-in number, 775-884-9910. Additionally, we look forward to having weekly interviews with a variety of interesting guests. During the second half of our show, today's guest interview, it's about racism in our schools and what the guest experienced firsthand as a white student in the mostly black Baltimore school system. So today's show, we've got three main segments. We've got an update on current issues, we've got education, and we've got sports. Let's see, catching up currently, what's going on here in Minneapolis? Other than the fact that late breaking today, the mayor, who's gone totally liberal on the protests and totally sucked up to them and allowed it to go on, he's currently kind of being held hostage in his own condo with protesters there wanting him out. There's more looting and burning this week. Word came out. A black man was shot and died. Oh boy, the looting and the burning started. All of a sudden, though, someone brought out a video, and it showed that, yeah, the man had died, and by a gunshot, he'd committed suicide. Well, it didn't make any difference. They don't want to waste a good looting day, so they just kept looting in the name of police brutality, even though it was a suicide. Also, the city has told private business owners they won't allow them to clean up and rebuild until they pay their taxes, even though it's the city of Minneapolis that allowed the looting and burning that destroyed their businesses. What's going on in Chicago? Mayor Lori Lightfoot. Chicago's about an hour away from Kenosha. And Lori Lightfoot's got her hands full in Chicago, but she figured, no, she'd have enough time to mind their business in Kenosha. So she was commenting on what they could have done or how the police were handling it poorly. Meanwhile, in her own city, 48 hours previously, there'd been 66 shootings. That's in 48 hours. Five of them were killed. Meanwhile, Mayor Lightfoot of Chicago is still maintaining her police-provided private security on her own home while the citizens of Chicago are kind of on their own. The mayor says, well, you know, I've got to have private security and be safe. They would like it too. Aurora, Colorado, just within the last couple days, this past week, a 30-year-old black man, Stephen Sinclair, ran up to a white man named Michael Connor with a knife, said, "Black lives matter. I'm going to kill you and your dog," and stabbed him. He's been arrested and charged with attempted murder. Georgetown, South Carolina, a black 23-year-old man, Tysheem Walters, charged with shooting and killing a white man named Charles Wall and his stepdaughter. Tysheem was driving down the street, rear-ended Wall's parked car. Walters got out of his car, shot both people dead, currently in jail with two counts of murder. What's behind all this? Well, the question comes up, What's the real story on interracial violent victimization, not homicides, but other violent crimes between blacks and whites? Well, Larry Elder, a conservative black radio host who's excellent, quoted this week the 2018 Department of Justice statistics, and they said that last year there were 593,000 interracial incidents between blacks and whites. You may wonder, how does that break down? Well, blacks committed, whites committed against blacks, 56,000 of those, about 10%. Blacks committed against the whites, 537,000, that's 90%. To go over that, that's of the interracial victimization. Blacks are victimizing whites 90% of the time this comes up. And this doesn't get reported. If it doesn't get reported, you can't work it. If you can't acknowledge a situation, you can't solve it. Speaking of which, some years ago, there was a song in a musical, and it was called Things Are Seldom What They Seem. Well, that's becoming more and more the Breonna Taylor story in Louisville. You remember what the initial report was that's turning out to be more and more false, that Breonna Taylor was shot and killed in her sleep, in her bed, when the cops broke in her house with a mistaken address, and that they just blew in there without saying anything, and she was victimized and killed, was there with her boyfriend. Well, the reports are starting to come out, more of the facts out of the police reports, as they often do, if people would remember. Now, meanwhile, Louisville has been going crazy for this. Oprah Winfrey has got Breonna Taylor on the cover of her magazine. Here's what's happening. First of all, it was not a mistaken address. The search warrant had her name, address, social security number on it. So absolutely it was targeted. The cops were not looking for the drug dealer. It's often been said, oh, they were looking for a drug dealer, and he was had already been taken into custody, so the cops really screwed it up. Well, that's not the story. The police knew they had the drug dealer in custody, but what they were looking for is more evidence. Now, you may ask yourself, why would they want more evidence? Why would they need this? Well, turns out Breonna Taylor knew the drug dealer, knew him for years, had dated him on and off. The drug dealer the police had just arrested, he was still getting mail and packages at her address for years. And during the raid, they found more mail that was there for him. Now, that one's a little odd. Why would someone, Miss Taylor, why would she still be having someone who had been years, maybe 5 years, since there'd been any kind of relationship there, but mail and packages to this drug dealer were still coming to her home? Now, another claim, the story that the police didn't knock, they just came blasting in and shot first. Well, that's false. They were outside knocking repeatedly and identifying themselves as cops. Now, this has all come out. This has been reported a number of places right now, including the Louisville paper. Police knocked repeatedly, and when they came in, they did not shoot first. Miss Taylor's boyfriend shot first and wounded a police officer. How about the part where Breonna was shot in bed in her sleep? It's totally false. She died in the hallway by the door. She and her boyfriend didn't know this was going on. You got this banging in the middle of the night. What is that? They were in the hallway, not opening, refusing to open the door because they said they couldn't hear anyone. They didn't know what it was. This is not to say that Breonna Taylor's death is not tragic. Any death is tragic, and hers also. She's not being charged with having drugs or anything. The issue of why she'd be receiving mail for years at her home for a drug dealer remains to be answered. But her death was tragic just like the other 54 homicide deaths every day in the U.S., are tragic. Her tragedy had nothing to do with racist police brutality. Should Miss Taylor be mourned and grieved by her friends and family and loved ones? Certainly. Should she be held as an icon of anti-racism? Certainly not. A group of lawyers in Louisville, black and white lawyers, collectively issued a statement about the fact that they said there's no way in the world the police are going to be charged or should be charged with murder in her case. Here's a quote from one of the black attorneys named John Waddle, who was this group that issued this public statement this week. If we, he said, if we as black people want equal justice, we must be willing to accept that the police are also entitled to equal justice. Again, this just so goes against everything you've heard about this story. And, oh, of course, the pro sports leagues and opportunistic politicians and everybody jumping on the bandwagon. Yeah, it was a tragedy that the door wasn't open, that they came in, but they had a warrant. They announced they came in there. They were shot at first, being the police. And Miss Taylor was a victim of bad circumstances there. But the idea that this was some racially unjust issue is just simply not accurate, not true. Okay, moving on to Kenosha, Wisconsin. And, of course, the nonviolent protests, right? They were only burning half the town down. Outside and nonviolent, you had Antifa and Black Lives Matter chanting, "Death to America! Kill the effing police," while they were burning the American flag. Kenosha is very much like the Breonna Taylor story. What was the initial story when it came out this week? Well, cops had shot another innocent black man, Jacob Blake, 7 times. Well, it was Jacob Blake. He was shot 7 times. Who was totally innocent, and he was just doing nothing other than trying to mediate an argument between two women, just being a good Samaritan. And, of course, the pro athletes on the far left and everybody went crazy, and the NBA just couldn't even play their playoff game and get richer, because they were so incensed by how horrible this was. Well, let's take a look at the facts that have come out since then. And of course, anybody who overreacted didn't bother to wait for the facts. But first of all, the police didn't just come by and say, you know, let's go get this Jacob Blake. 911 was called on Jacob Blake. He was mediating nothing. It was a total lie. He was not supposed to be at a woman's house, possibly ex-girlfriend. He had taken her keys, and he wouldn't return them. He was not stopping to help or mediate anyone. As he was there at her home, he had an outstanding warrant for domestic abuse, third-degree sexual assault. So the cops came there to talk with him, and he immediately was resisting arrest. They were having to wrestle him enough to where to try to control him. They had to tase him. He breaks away from them, from the tasing, walks away from the cops toward his car with, in his own words, he had a knife in his possession. Whether it was in his hand or he was going in to get it in the car, but there's a knife there that was found, and he says, yes, it was mine. Jacob Blake had several previous weapon charges. So he didn't stop fighting the cops. Being tased, that didn't stop him. And the question has come up and still remains to be answered. Why exactly did the police shoot him from behind, and why was he so intent on going in this car? Well, the only thing we know now is, if you've ever seen that YouTube video, if you haven't, you need to Google it. It shows two cops stopping a man who broke away from him to just go into his car and grab something in the front seat. And he grabs a gun, and the video shows very graphically him shooting both cops several times. So did the police have sufficient cause to shoot Jacob Blake? Well, everything we're hearing right now, resisting arrest, fighting the cops, possessing a weapon, not going away, reaching in the car to get something unknown. Stay tuned. This one's going to get interesting. But what are all the overreactors and the people who benefit from exploiting this saying? Well, Black Lives Matter, one of their leaders, Sean King, and you remember Sean King. He's the one who wanted to tear down all the pictures of Jesus in our churches because they were racist. Well, regarding the Kenosha looting and rioting, he said, I'm not calling for peace. I'm not asking my people to back off. The mayhem going on is deserved. Well, here's a question. President Trump was banned last week on Twitter by saying that the violence needed to be stopped in Minneapolis. Okay, then why is Sean King calling for violence still on Twitter? Governor Tony Evers of Wisconsin says, before any details were known, right, about Jacob Blake, just another black man being mercilessly killed by police. None of the facts were out. None of the facts were out. That didn't stop the governor from running his mouth about this. Then Lieutenant Governor Barnes, a black man. We don't need an investigation to know this follows a long pattern of violence against black lives across the country. Barnes was advocating for no due process. Somebody tell me how that's any different from the Jim Crow justice days when there'd be a rumor that a black man had committed some crime and a mob wouldn't wait for a trial or for facts to come out. They'd just take him out and kill him, or hang him. How is that different from what they were doing with when they were saying, wanting to just basically, the cops were the victim. These cops are terrible. Start burning this town down. Then Kenosha is just unfolding like a soap opera. Then you've got this Kyle Wittenhouse, white teenager who was carrying around what looked like an assault rifle and accused of killing two people with it. Kyle was 17. At 17, he was breaking Wisconsin law by publicly carrying a weapon. Was Kyle shot at first? Did he actually kill both people? Was he so fed up with the abuse of police that he felt he had to do something? They're debatable issues, but they're not of primary importance in this debate. We're a nation of laws, and the fact that Kenosha was exploding in that riot doesn't change the fact that the Wittenhouse boy illegally brought a gun to that situation when it was not a matter of life or death for him. More facts will be forthcoming. Anyhow, quite a week. We've got a little award this week, two of them. One is whiniest statement of the week. Whiniest for crying wolf about racist white people. And the award goes to Michelle Obama. Speaking on her podcast this week about whites, Michelle said that whites are rude to blacks because when she was in public dressed incognito during her White House years, she had white people stop to pet her dogs while she was walking them, or in some instances, one or two of them cut in front of her in an ice cream parlor. And she was incensed, Michelle was, because those white people didn't even recognize who she was. To quote her, that's white people acting like we black people don't exist, she said, and it's exhausting. Well, Michelle, get over yourself. Those situations were not and are not a we black people thing. It's just you and your massive ego. Believe it or not, whites and all races also have people jump the line on them every now and then. They often have people prefer petting their dogs to talking to the owners. Whites didn't fail to recognize you because you're black, Michelle, but because first ladies are frankly pretty irrelevant. Your long overstretched 15 minutes of fame are over. So a good idea would be to just move on with your life. Enjoy that $38 million that you and your husband profited from your time in the White House and all kinds of extra gigs that never would have happened. And in this country you said you're not proud of, just stop mislabeling your ego problem as everybody's race issue. And now we've got a best statement of the week toward improving race relations. Hooray. Celebrity sports commentator Jason Whitlock, responding to LeBron James, blaming white people, racist cops, and America for that Jacob Blake shooting in Kenosha. And countless other police incidents. Well, this was before the facts were even released. James said, quote, "Another black man was targeted by police and we want justice. Black men, women, and children in America are terrified and scared." And to this, Mr. Whitlock, who's also black, replied, "LeBron James is a bigot and he's lying. I'm black. I'm not scared. I'm not terrified. And neither is LeBron James. He and the political activists controlling him want black people to immerse themselves in fear, a tool used to control people." Whitlock said, "If you comply with police instructions, there's virtually no chance of an American citizen being harmed by police. LeBron James is promoting racism. He's acting like he's overseeing the black KKK. He's demonizing a group of white people based on the behavior of a few." Call in to us, 884-9910, 884-9910. How do you feel about this? Let us know your thoughts. Also, coming up, guest interview, a man named Jack Remington, and we're going to be hearing about the schools. Now, when he comes on, these real issues in the public schools are a hotly debated topic. Solving the school issues, it's critical to solving the life problems that come from them. What's going on right now in the country, racially, absolutely, comes from the homes primarily and the schools secondarily, simply not getting the job done. The seeds of this racial discord are planted in our homes and schools. So the leading question becomes, why do black students continue to perform so far below their peers in learning and behavior? 85% of black students achieve below grade level in math and English. 85%. More than double the rate of whites, and much higher than Latinos and certainly Asians. And as black students get older, the gap increases. Where does the fault lie? Black students themselves, their parents, the schools, or some combination? Taking a long view of this problem can be helpful, and our interview with Jack Remington after break is going to solve some answers. It's going to provide some answers. During Jack Remington's public school years in the 60s and 70s in the Baltimore area, he attended public schools that ranged from 75 to 80% black, down to 10 to 20% black. Jack's white. During my own teaching in public schools from the 70s up to today, primarily with minority students, I repeatedly saw firsthand and still see the cause of this huge education gap. So stay with us after break. We're going to be talking frankly about the extent and nature of the problem and how it could be solved. So we've got Jack coming on right after break, and we'll look for seeing you then.
The Talk of Northern Nevada. Speak out,
884-9910. And welcome back. Welcome back to Race Across America. I'm Paul White, your host, and we're just getting ready to start a great interview, so stick with us. If you'd like to ask questions for our guest or for me, the number is 775-884-9910, 775-884-9910. Today, we are welcoming Mr. Jack Remington from Ventura. Jack, are you there?
Hold on, give me a second.
Hello, Jack.
Hello. Yeah, can you hear me?
There you are. There you are. good to have you with us on Race Across America. Thanks for being here.
Well, thanks for having me.
I tell you what, Jack, you heard the lead in. What we're talking about, our show is about race issues in the country, and nowhere does it outpicture more than in the schools. Hassles between the kids with each other, hassles with the teachers. We know the kids aren't learning anything. We got 1,200 teachers assaulted a day in public schools in America. And so your experience, we're going to try to get a long view here. So when you and I were talking about your background, you had kind of like three separate segments, you might say, of your public school education. The first was, you say, around from early to later 60s, elementary school in Baltimore City schools. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. And you said that so can you just kind of tell me about it? What was the demographic of the school like, and what was your experience like? This was elementary school.
Okay. From kindergarten to fourth grade, I went to Hannah School number 55. It was approximately 70-80% black, black Americans.
Yeah.
And the rest, there was no Hispanics. It was black and white. There was no Indians, no Asians.
Interesting.
Long story short, long story short, when I went to those Baltimore City schools, they were actually, in my opinion, they were good. The first grade, we learned about George Washington chopping down the cherry tree, by being honest. I mean, they had some values.
Good.
No, seriously.
That's okay. Good.
But as now getting to second grade, getting to third grade, getting to fourth grade, it started getting worse. And the kids, we could see that.
Now, what was getting worse, Jack? Were all the kids out of control? Were just black kids? Was discipline dropping down? What made the change?
Well, I think that they didn't know what to do with the growing problem, with the growing demographics. And the whites were starting to flee, and by the time I was in the fourth grade, I was one of three white kids in the whole class. I mean, it got really bad.
Now, how did that work? Were you kind of victimized because of your color, or would they go after everybody?
Yes,
or
absolutely.
What was it?
Yes. Yes, because of our crime when we were small we were white.
And how would it?
I don't remember too much in the first grade.
Like coming or going to school, was it an issue?
Yes, every 5 days a week, Monday through Friday. So because they were waiting for me outside of school, so I could never play softball, I could never play hopscotch, I could never do after school activities. I was afraid, so I'd go home.
Now, did you ever try complaining to the principal or your teacher?
No, not at first.
Yeah.
I'm the oldest of four. It's me and my two sisters. They got ravaged too. Matter of fact, they got it worse than what I did. Because the black boys liked my sisters, and that was a problem. Long story short, I could see the discipline starting to break down while I was in elementary school, because the mothers would come to the school and say, "My angel didn't do that," or "He's not like this," or "She's not like this," and I was there. I saw it.
Yeah, Oh no, go ahead.
Yeah, the parents and inner city women, the inner city parents,
mothers,
they were losing control of the, they were losing control of their kids. I saw very few fathers.
Right. Well,
the older I got, the older I got, we saw fewer and fewer fathers. And even we noticed that as kids.
It's gone. And I, my experience to our listeners, takes up through the 70s, 80s, 90s, and 2000s in schools that had large minority populations, primarily black. And I would see that too. I would see this still coming, that the effect of the large amount of kids born out of wedlock with no dad in the home, this was a big factor. Now, Jack, so let's see what the difference it makes. So you go into middle school, and now the black population is about 35-40%. Now, how did things change, or did they?
They changed for me for the better. I started doing wrestling programs and football. You know, I could stay after school. I didn't have to worry about getting beat up by the black kids all the time. So, I mean, there was still some of that, but very, very little, and you could get allies and you protected each other. But it still wasn't all that bad in the county. We went from Baltimore City to Baltimore County. But the discipline was top-notch, and the school system was actually better in the county than it was the city.
That's interesting. So as the discipline, and the reason I emphasize this is, what the trend is right now in schools, and anybody, any parent with their child in public schools needs to know this, and frankly, any 30-plus years in public schools, any parent with their child in public schools doesn't care about what happens to their child. I was a principal. No. I was a superintendent. I can guarantee you this. So now you're in there, and better discipline, stronger discipline led to a better school. Is that correct?
Yes. And now when I was growing up, they had for you to play basketball, football, wrestling, soccer, anything you wanted to do that the school would sponsor you for, you had to keep up a certain a GPA. I mean, I got A's, almost all straight A's, so it was never a problem for me. But some of the kids would struggle. I mean, you actually had study groups before study groups ever became in vogue. We would help each other. I mean, without the teachers prompting us, both black and white, a core of the student body actually did get along. But every now and then, they would have to call the police in for a close to a near riot. But I was never a part of that because I saw what happened in Baltimore City. I'd get on the bus, I was gone. You know, I didn't stick around.
It's still very much the same way, in that when you've got the strong discipline, everything works better. But now in schools today, when they're crying out for better discipline, when they need it, they're lessening it. We'll come to that later. But so that did okay. Well, now you go on to high school. You're out in the county. Now it's lesser black population. Now, how did that situation compare with your other two?
Well, when I went from Baltimore County to Carroll County, which is the center of the state, and it's a very, very rural farming, maybe 10 to 20% black tops, mm-hmm. black students tops. Now, they were the victims.
Interesting.
The redneck, white, yes. They were now the victims, and they all lived in this little place called Dorsey Town.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the co-captain of the wrestling team, he was my best friend, Warren Dorsey, and I still remember him to this day.
I'll be darned.
And I became his ally. Which is a big switch for me because, I mean, when I was growing up, from when I was 5, 6, 7 years old to, you know, 16, 17, I was not a fan of the black people because they beat me up every day.
Sure.
Or they hassled me, I grew up really disliking them. I don't want to say I hated them, but I hated what they did.
Well, what changed your viewpoint?
Well, to their credit, every now and then, one of the mothers or their aunts would get a hold of the kid bullying us, and then she'd say, "You must be picking the kids for you. You know, you're 4 years old." So, you know, oh, I forgot to tell you. In those days, if you couldn't do the reading or writing like today, they failed you. So we were competing with kids 3, 4, 5 years older than us, and they were twice our size. I mean, that's bad for a kid in school, any race. But the Baltimore City and Baltimore County schools, they used to fail the kids. If you couldn't do the work, they failed you. They held you back. Now they, because of the complaints, because of the ACLU and other organizations, well, you're being discriminatory. They're starting to turn them out. It's a factory. Open it. Turnstile. Get them out. Get them in. Get them out.
Huh.
You know, and they have no regard. This is for all races. They have no regard of what the level those kids can do math work or to get a job. And that's why now they complain when they hire the Asians and the Eastern Indians that could do math wizards because they're. When they go to school in their countries, they make them work.
Well, Jack, just having a little bit of audio, so forgive me, Jack. Our audio's kind of going now. I got you. Okay, so how would you draw? What conclusions would you draw? So, in other words, what makes a school? And we know I just checked. Baltimore's got 39 high schools. Hang on, Jack, can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay. All righty. So Baltimore's got 39 high schools, Baltimore City, in 13 of them last year. The number of students who tested grade level in math was absolutely zero. Zero students in one-third of all their high schools couldn't even do grade level. Hang on one second. Couldn't even do anything grade level in math. Now, in what you experienced, what's the way to make the schools better? Is the issue what percentage of different races we have? Is the issue discipline? What makes the difference based on your experience?
It's the discipline. If you have to pick one factor and you get one wish with the magic genie out of the bottle, it's discipline because you can apply it to all the students. You don't have to worry about a black kid or a white kid or an Asian kid or an Eastern Indian kid or an American Indian kid, if a male or female. They have to be respectful of the rules and laws of our country, and your job is school. I am a firm believer, if you go to school, it's your job. It's not a place for you to hang out and meet with your friends and hang in the hallway and goof off and play hooky and do all that other stuff. It's not good.
Yeah, well,
it's discipline. That has to come back.
And you know what I've seen, Jack, in schools that I ran, is that the race situation was kind of like a red herring, like a distraction. That when there was good discipline, it didn't matter who you had, what percentage of what students you had.
No.
That if you've got good discipline and you're making kids do their work in classes, there's a school that works. And on the other hand, if you don't, they're not going to. Would you kind of have seen that too?
Yes. You know, the very first day I had a Facebook page, a lady from a teacher in New Mexico sent me this. Yeah, she sent me a meme.
Yeah.
And the first,
all right.
The first.
There you go. Okay, I couldn't hear you for a minute. So if we could go back, yeah. if in your experience, if you've got the discipline, you're making kids learn. Does that make a good school?
Yes, or it's a foundation to turn into a good school.
Yeah.
And then once the social construct of that neighborhood or that school is going at, and then they get the reputation of, hey, look, these teachers don't play. You're going to do the work, or you're out. Okay, and if you're out, where are you going to go?
Right.
I mean, make them think, you know, what the consequences are. And I mean, I personally think it's the parenting, but we're talking about education, so I don't want to, you know, rain on your parade on your TV or on your radio show.
But, you know, no, the parenting. We agree with you.
The parenting must improve in this country on all levels, and not just black people. Everybody.
Yeah. What?
Everybody needs to be held responsible.
Right. Some are doing it better than others, but it's basically a disappearing art. And what we're finding is that, you know, the schools are just, well, I'll give you an example of what's backing off now. Three school districts in California said they're going to pass laws stopping the discipline of black and disabled students. Now, when they say disabled, they don't mean they're punishing the kids who have one leg or are blind or can't hear. Disabled is, their by their description, is what you call resource in special ed, which is the most subjective, best idea for harming students that they ever came up with. And so now what they're going to do is let it go on. And school districts, Jack, in this, they're not going to be able to suspend students for just simply, and here's how they write about it, reporters, for just being disruptive in class or defiant. Well, let me explain to parents again who have got. Yeah, we both know this. Let me explain to parents what that looks like. That means a teacher tells a child, you know, wake up, sit up, put your phone away, whatever. And that kid with a ton of expletives just tells that, and often threats, tells that teacher what to do with it. And immediately, you've lost your whole class. No learning is going on. The teacher's... if you'd call it, I don't know, professional courage to stand up there and try to teach, just gets destroyed. And what's your idea? And then they have this restorative discipline. You'll like this one. Here in Reno, we did surveys with the teachers on what the discipline was like. And they said it couldn't be worse. They said if you'd have a kid who would just totally disrespect you, do nothing, refuse to work, lay down and sleep, whatever. And if the teacher sent them to the office, they said they'd come back in 5 minutes with a Coke and a bag of popcorn from the principal's office, and looking at the teacher like, let's see who calls the shots now. And so this is just a mess. And then after school, they have to meet with, the parent and the principal and the student. And typically the first question asked a teacher who's been totally disrespected and abused by this kid in class, the first question they ask the teacher is, now, Miss Smith, what do you think you could have done different where Johnny wouldn't have had to express his feelings? I mean, isn't that just the craziest thing you ever heard, Jack?
They're blaming the teacher for the kid.
Oh, sure they are. And in the teacher for the princely sum of, $39,000 a year puts up with this. Well, we got a call. We got Keith. Jack, let's see what he wants to ask. Keith, are you there?
Sure.
Yeah, I'm here. It kind of goes back to the Floyd killing and that this and that, actually.
Which killing now?
Floyd.
Oh, yeah. George Floyd, uh-huh. What'd you think about that?
All I want to say is, be short, do what the cops tell you to do. You can't resist arrest, or you're going to pay the price. Floyd was resisting arrest. His Blake guy was resisting arrest. They tasered him twice. They told him probably 3-4 times to halt. And he's going in his car for a knife. He had a knife in his car. You have to do what the cops tell you, or you're going to lose.
Oh, now, you don't mean Floyd. You mean the guy in Kenosha, Blake.
Well, Floyd also.
Yeah,
Floyd was resisting
Floyd.
Arrest.
Yeah.
That's why the cop put his knee on the guy's neck.
Right. Floyd said about 6 times in 20 minutes, I can't breathe. Refused to get in the police car, was resisting the cops. And Blake had a weapon in there. I agree. If you've never seen that Chris Rock video, how not to have any problems with the police, people ought to look it up. It's done in a humorous vein, but it's 100% serious. Well, we appreciate you calling. Thanks for listening. Okay, well, Jack, we want to thank you, too. This has been Jack Remington from Ventura. Jack, you do a regular podcast. If they wanted to catch your podcast, how would they do that? When are they on?
We don't have a podcast.
Oh, okay.
I have a YouTube channel.
Oh, okay. Well, how would they find you?
Yeah. Just go on YouTube and type in Jack Remington, political analyst. That's what we got to do.
Okay. Well, we'll hope some of them try it. And we thank you again thank you so much for being on the show.
Anytime, Paul.
All right, buddy. You take care. Yeah. So we heard from Jack. Again, my experiences in public schools, typically, as a principal, I took schools that were totally out of control and were almost 100% minority. And one particular one in San Francisco, Potrero Hill Middle School, was absolutely out of control. It was considered by the superintendent to be their worst school in the city. And I followed a principal in there who maybe had suspended, 4 or 5 kids a month prior to my coming there. When the bell rang, nobody was in the classrooms. Once the bell did ring, it didn't make any difference. Once I got in the classroom, nothing went on. School was out of control, fights, learning nothing, going nowhere. And immediately we started enforcing the rules fairly reasonably, but we enforced them. So I was averaging about 40 or 50 suspensions a month when it first started. And majority of the school was minority. Majority of the suspensions were minority. The majority of those were black. And I had one grandma come down to pick up her son one day, her grandson, who I'd suspended. And she said, well, Mr. White, you must be prejudiced, because why are you kicking out so many more black kids than anybody else, any of the other students? And I said, Grandma, you're asking the wrong question. I said, I'm grieved by it also. But the question is, why are the black kids breaking the laws in the school so much more than the others? I said, that's what needs to change. Well, I stayed the course, took a lot of name calling from parents and community activists about it. But the bottom line was that within a few short weeks, the suspensions dropped away to hardly any. The kids of all kinds and colors, race became nothing. Learning actually started going on. The school got in order. Vandalism and whatnot dropped away to nothing. And the school became just another normal middle school. When the bell rang, the halls were empty. If the kids were in a class, they were working, or they were sent to the principal, and we dealt with it. So this idea that California is going to tell all their schools that they've got it, and they can't discipline them. These special ed kids, this resource thing, not being able to discipline them, they're ruining them for the rest of their life if they do this. And on top of which, then, they're just, the big thing is for the school administrators to show higher graduation rates. So they just tell the teachers, you can't fail them, you can't suspend them, we're just going to give them diplomas. We wonder who's out there looting and rioting and complaining about racist cops or get rid of the government. I'll tell you who it is. It's the kids who have gone through this system for years, were held to no account on their behavior, learned nothing, had no kind of interpersonal skills that would hold them employed for any time at all, and had their heads pumped full of distorted upside-down curriculum, especially in social studies, about the whole nature of America. What's coming up, we'll be getting into this next week. Black Lives Matter and the 1619 Project, kind of like the top two racist promulgating organizations in the country. A woman named Nicole Hannah Jones with the 1619 Project, just a reinvention of how history happened. And what they're doing is they've gotten the teachers to the NEA and all of them intimidated to do this. And the kids are going to be absolutely being their heads turned upside down. The emphasis of the history teaching is going to be, listen to this one, that the history of the United States is simply the story of progressive movements against oppression. Not freedom, not the greatest country the world's ever known that's helped more people from more countries get their lives and achieve their dreams than any place ever did. No. Your kid in public school is going to be taught that it's just been one long struggle against oppression for anybody who's not from Western Europe, and that this is what the state curriculum will be like. And meanwhile, there will be no discipline. There will be no order. So even what they're trying to, the good thing about that, if they're not having discipline, they wouldn't learn right social studies. They're not going to learn wrong social studies either, because it's going to be, the classrooms are going to be so upside down. Anyhow, next week we're coming on. We've got more. We're really going to dig in on the education next week and pro sports. It's a topic of itself. What a horrible part they're playing in everything going on with trying to resolve the looting and the rioting and the angry and the name calling, etc. So until then, you can reach us, you can contact us during the week. If you like the show, you want to keep it on, you can help support us. We've got a PayPal. If you go to raceacrossamerica20@gmail.com, you can support us. And it's just a matter of, we've got a wonderful country, wonderful opportunities. The goal of the show is to just solve these absolute, get the truth out about these race issues, because they can be solved. Again, we'll quote this week, again, Mr. Joel Patrick, who identifies himself as the legendary redneck. I stand with black people, not BLM. I stand with white people, not the KKK. God only made one race, the human race, and I'll never be so ignorant as to judge someone by the color of skin God gave him. Neither will we, neither will you, and thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next week.